You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Federal Premium Ammunition and their new centerfire rifle ammunition Terminal Ascent. Now, the Terminal Ascent has a slipstream polymer tip that helps flatten trajectories and initiates low-velocity expansion at longer ranges. The Terminal Ascent gives you match-grade long-range accuracy in a bonded hunting bullet, and it comes in a variety of cartridges, including the 6.5 Creedmoor, the 280 Ackley Improved, the 28 Nosler, the 7mm Remington Mag 30-06, and the 300 Win Mag. If you want to find more information about the Terminal Ascent, visit federalpremium.com. And while you're there, check out It's Federal Season, the official podcast of Federal Ammunition.
Welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies podcast. I'm your host, Chad Riker, and Backcountry Rookies was designed to prepare, inspire, and educate hunters to head west for their backcountry big game hunt. Join us as we talk to some of the most experienced hunters in the West about their tips and tricks to help you along your journey to get out west for big game hunting. We also share some of our good, bad, and ugly experiences that we've had along the way. Kick back and enjoy the show. Hey, welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies podcast. I'm your host, Chad Riker, and I'm excited for today's show. So I have Jason Holliday on here, and Jason and I have been talking for at least a couple of years now. We've created a friendship over time, and Jason originally reached out to me a couple of years ago about some podcasting stuff, and he created his own podcast, which, to be honest, is one of my favorites out there. It's one that I listen to regularly. Is that a word? Did I say that right? Whatever. We'll get by. And anyway, so Jason, I had him on today because through our conversations and through listening to his show, I really think he brings a super real perspective to the first few years of Western big game hunting. With all of that quick intro, I'm going to do my sponsor ad right here. And then when we come back from sponsors, we'll be on here with Jason Holliday.
The Backcountry Rookies is proudly brought to you by Go Hunt, Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting, and Vortex Optics. So if you're anything like me or Jordan or the rest of the Backcountry Rookies crew, or a lot of hunters out there, right now you're in the middle of that application process and you're trying to figure out what states you want to apply for and what units within those states. Go Hunt is the best possible option that you have. Use the code ROOKIES and become an insider. When you do, you'll get $50 in gear shop credit so you can buy some of that gear that you were looking forward to getting this year. Not only do you get draw odds and strategy articles and just that all of the analysis that Go Hunt does for you, but now you also get the maps, and soon you'll get the mobile app that comes with it. So everything you need for hunting, elk, mule deer, pronghorn, bighorn, sheep, whatever it is all in one spot, and that is Go Hunt. Become a member, use the code ROOKIES, get $50 in gear shop credit. If you're focusing on elk hunting, Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting is the spot to go to get your education and get prepared for this year's elk season. Use the code ROOKIES and get $20 off your membership at University of Elk Hunting. That, if you haven't looked at that education platform before, it literally has everything that you need to know for elk hunting, from what to put in your pack and preparation and also some tag drawing information, all the way from the very, very basics in the very beginning, all the way to packing an elk out of the woods, and even some taxidermy stuff and meat processing for when you do get it out of the woods. It's literally every step of the way. And finally, Vortex Optics. So we are very proud to be supported by Vortex Optics. Vortex has wonderful, wonderful binoculars and scopes and optics in general, range finders. Everything that they have is fantastic, and we've been using them for a long time. Now they're getting into the apparel business, and go to their website, check out the apparel that they have. They've got some really, really cool stuff out there. use the code ROOKIES and save 20% off your purchase of Vortex apparel. Now let's get to the show.
Jason, welcome to the show.
Hey, Chad, thanks for having me, man. This is the highlight of my week right now.
Well, it's Friday, so you must have had a pretty rough week, I guess, if this is your highlight.
No. This is cool, man. I'm stoked to be on here on this side of the microphone for a change.
Right. So, let's talk about that really quick. So, you're on the flip side of the microphone. I know anytime I'm a guest on another show, it's just different, right?
Yeah,
it's totally different. So
what do I do with my hands? I don't know.
You can do whatever you want to with them, but if things get weird, I'm turning off the video.
Right.
That's for
sure.
Well, I'll tell you, why don't we introduce the Harvest Holiday podcast? And that way the listeners know that they can go search for you, they can go look for you, and kind of what Harvest Holiday is. And then we'll get into this first few years of Western big game hunting. So tell us about it. What do you got? What's your podcast?
Okay. Thanks. Again, Chad, thank you for having me on the show. I've actually been a long time listener. You know, like you said in the intro, I reached out to you as a guy from Ohio that was committed to going on his first Western big game hunt to hunt elk with archery equipment in Colorado. And, but I also wanted to do a podcast. I like the format. I listen to a lot of podcasts, like kind of we all do right now, soaking up anything from information to entertainment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, people tell me I have the gift for gab, so why not? So I started a podcast, and I got to throw props to Michelle, my fiance. She came up with the name Harvest Holiday because I'm like, I don't want to do, I had this great name for a podcast because I'm a rookie and I'm going out into the backcountry. And I'm like, backcountry rookies, right?
Yeah, that is a great name.
And then I found yours and I was like, damn it. Somebody's already got this podcast. Yeah. So I'm trying to think of names and she's like, come up with Harvest Holiday. And, because I didn't want it to be solely a show about elk hunting because, I'm from Ohio. I'm only going to be out there, 5-10 days, a year. So I can't revolve my life and my podcast around elk hunting. And I wanted to talk about more than just elk hunting or even hunting specifically. I kind of wanted to just let the organically will everything from, obviously hunting stories and knowledge on that end to, financial, planning for a hunt. And cause that's kind of the, my real job. That's kind of what I do. And, I kind of wanted to incorporate all of those things that I don't find on a lot of podcasts. I listen to podcasts that talk about gear and clothing and packs and all of these things, or even calling, but there's some things on the outside, like, the realisticness of a hunt like this and the dynamics of planning a hunt, both financially, physically, mentally, emotionally, which I've, kind of found out a lot of new things firsthand. And so I've been talking about that on the Harvest Holiday, some real trials and tribulations. I've kind of, with humility kind of talked openly about, the last couple of years and how I've kind of just bailed and come home early when I didn't have to, because I got overwhelmed and I didn't have a good plan. I went solo. The first year was supposed to be a buddy hunt and ended up turning into a solo hunt. And so I was kind of like thrown into it, on my own. And, the things I've learned, like I said, from gear to financial stuff, I've tried to share my experiences in an open, honest way, because I want people to experience this without draining their bank accounts. And, like I said, from a guy from Ohio, I want to shorten that learning curve. Because when I said I wanted to do this, not just the podcast, when I wanted to go out Western hunting, I was like, okay, I'm doing this. Now what? What I mean? So there's so much information out there. I didn't know which direction to go. And, I dove right. We've had these conversations many times. I've dove into, you can go down some deep rabbit holes with gear and mapping systems and all of these things. So I guess to kind of wrap it all up, the show isn't necessarily a hunting podcast. I like to get people on that talk about gear, but I also like to kind of talk about, the personal sacrifice and the emotional side of things. And, cause there's a lot of layers to it, as you can probably attest to.
That's, not just hunting, but life in general, right? There's all kinds of layers. And you did a couple of shows that I thought were really cool this year. You did like a Thanksgiving episode about what you're thankful for. And it's just you, man. And it's raw stuff. And I think that's what I really, really like about your show. And then you mentioned it earlier too, was the humility. A lot of people won't say those things about I came off the mountain early, or if they do, it's oftentimes it's not a true statement, right? Or there's some kind of crazy excuse. And you have said it many times, like there's no crazy excuse about it, man. I missed home, I missed my wife, I missed, you know, and there was reasons. So let's jump into it.
Sure.
We're going to talk about heading out west, a guy from Ohio. So there's a couple of things with your story that I think are going to be really, really cool. Gear is one thing that you mentioned, and this is a topic that we're definitely going to talk about we'll get there. I think a lot of times we'll get there, but I'll preface it with this. Often that's easy, right? It's easy to buy gear and think you're going to be successful without putting in the work. Comes in the mail, you put it on, you look really cool. You go out west and you look cool, right? But there's a lot of things that are missing. But we'll get into all that stuff later. The first thing I wanted to know about is that first year, what were your initial planning steps? And let's talk about what went right as far as planning, and then we'll talk about what went wrong, because there's no way you're going to nail it on your first time. You know, there's no way you're going to plan it perfectly to where you go out west and everything lines up just right. So what went right for your planning, and then what went wrong?
Well, what went right was the fact that I committed to it. You know, I put it down and I made the commitment. I wasn't wishy-washy about it. You know, like I said, at first I had a friend that was, you know, closer to Colorado than I was. So that kind of motivated me, like, you know, I'm going to hunt together with someone. And, you know, the things I did right, I listened to podcasts like yours, you know, because you had already had a half a dozen shows with some great information and some other podcasts out there too. Started following people on social media that were successful elk hunters and callers. So I was getting tidbits on, I don't know how to call an elk. I don't know how to find an elk. You know, I know they're out west. That was the general gist of it. So, you know, I didn't really focus on gear at first. I really didn't. I focused on, you know, I'm going to be out there in the wilderness. Like, how do you navigate that? Well, you need a mapping service. Okay. Google Earth was the first thing that I thought of. And it's like, okay, well, you know, there's all these units and things. And I didn't know what a game unit was. You know, I didn't know and some of them you can buy an OTC tag, which is over the counter. You can literally go in and buy over the counter. Okay. I can dig that, you know, how much does it cost and how do you get it? Do you have to apply for that? And, you know, then I just kind of found, you know, the resources like, you know, the Colorado Parks and, you know, Wildlife website and just started reading and getting information off myself or for myself. And, you know, so those were the steps that I did right first, was kind of start forming the plan of, you know, how I'm going to get there. And then with that came like the financial side of it. Like, how much does this stuff cost? You know, and at first it's like, you know, when you look at a Colorado archery elk tag over the counter, non-resident, and they make you buy a couple of things with it, you know, the small game tag, or it's roughly right now just shy of $800 altogether. So that's like a sock in the gut right away, you know? So
yeah, it is.
And planning that financially was like, you know, one of my first goals and things like that. And I'll add first, like, When I decided to do this, it was like 2016. I tell the story all the time on my show too, but in a condensed version, I went to Yellowstone on my 40th birthday and saw an elk for the very first time. First time at Yellowstone, first time seeing a bull elk. So I was hooked right there emotionally, but it took me a couple of years to get financially prepared. I had to take care of some debt. Mm-hmm. You know, I had some credit card debt. I had some other priorities. So this wasn't something I could just do right then and there. As badly as I wanted to do it, I knew the right thing to do was, you know, work, have that goal. It might not be this year or next year, the year after, but I'm going to get there. Like a five-year plan, air quotes. And so that was one of the steps I took, and I'm glad I did, because I, you know, freed up some debt and freed up some extra money to, you know, purchased the gear and the things that I wanted.
Yeah. So what went wrong with your planning?
Oh, man. Dude.
It's not just one thing?
No, no. Yeah. It's many things. My, you know, and I know a lot of people are going to relate to this because, you know, if you're listening to this show, obviously, we're all kind of in the same family. You know, we want to go out in the back country. We're rookies of the back country. We're coming from the Midwest states or maybe the, you know, the Southern states and things like that. And, you know, so we're following guys and gals that are, you know, influencers, if I can use the term influencers, you know, maybe they're doing this for a living, you mm-hmm. know, and they have sponsors, they wear all the gear, you know, they wear the cool packs and they carry the cool shelters and the, you know, they got the boots and the, you know, all this stuff. And then they're out there living the life. And there's like I always use the term, the romanticism of the whole thing.
I think that's an excellent word.
The backcountry. Yeah. I'm going to go 10 miles deep, bro. And, you know, I'm going to go solo, I'm gonna go 10 miles deep and I'm going for 10 days. And it's like, that sounds so rad. There's going to be bugling bulls and aspens and, you know, nine yards. So I got sucked into that and I'm like, okay, so now I need gear. I need all this gear, you know, and I picked Sitka because that's what a lot of guys were wearing. And I understood the concept of the layering system, moisture management. Hey, I totally agree. Right.
Yeah.
And then I start looking at price tags of everything. And I'm like, I don't care. You know, I have to have the, you know, bottom layers, top layers, everything in between from the base all the way to the top. I got to have it all. And it's going to cost me $2,000, maybe even more. And I don't even have boots yet, but I don't care. I'm going to have all this. And to be fair, I did work a lot of overtime. You know, I voluntarily worked a lot of Saturdays and Sundays to purchase a lot of that stuff. So, you know, I did like, you know, set those goals and like work hard for some of that stuff. But there was some stuff that I swiped a credit card on because I thought it was like a last minute purchase. And dude, I'm telling you right now, like we talked about earlier before we started recording, like I found out very quickly that the mountain doesn't care if you're wearing $2,000 worth of Sitka, and I'm not picking on Sitka, it could be First Light or whatever these top tier brands are. You know, the mountain doesn't care if you were wearing $2,000 worth of Sitka or $200 Walmart camo. It will happily beat your ass in either of those outfits. And I found that out right away. Mm-hmm. And even talking to John Barklow, who is the big game product manager at Sitka, I had him on the show too, a couple times. And, you know, he designs this stuff and he's even agreed, like, you don't need it all. But we get sucked in because we follow these people on social media and we think that we have to have those kinds of things. And yeah, so I guess I don't want to say it went wrong because I quickly turned my mistake into a podcast that I could talk about and, you know, try to bring that value to other people that maybe I saved somebody $500, you know, by like, just like ease into it because the mountains are so big, Chad, and you know that. And, you know, when you get out there initially and you start huffing up the mountain, all the best camo in the world, if you're not in shape, you know, if you haven't done your training part, it's still not going to save you. You know what I mean? So there's a lot more to it for sure.
So I totally agree with you. And I did the same thing in my initial years. I think a lot of people do. I had this conversation with Dan Johnson not too long ago it was specifically about gear. That's all we talked about. And Dan asked me this kind of the same question, like, did I buy everything in the beginning? Did I buy way too much stuff? Why did I buy the stuff that I bought? And I did the same thing. And I think everybody does it in those first couple of years where they see it on the social media or Facebook or whatever, YouTube videos, whatever it is, people see it. They think that they have to have it. And the reality of it was, for me, I was in the military at the time. I had all of the gear that I needed, literally the military outfit. I had everything that I could have needed to hunt in. It was heavy equipment, right? And I mean, it wasn't the greatest stuff ever made, but I totally could have used all of that equipment. But because I was seeing things on the TV or whatever, I started to buy new gear and new equipment because I thought that that's what I needed. I was the same way. I'm going in 10 days, 10 miles in, And day one, our first year, we made it about 5 miles in on a huge elevation gain, and it kicked our ass. And we came back down. We set up a beautiful base camp, dude, right next to a river. And we had all the water supply that we needed. And we basically just started hunting like 3 or 4 mile radius from our camp at that point. And that was the best decision we ever made for first year, was scrap that whole idea of 10 miles deep for 10 straight days.
Yeah.
It totally, to go to your finances, and we'll get to finances next, but I think that that idea cost, that 10 miles deep for 10 days idea cost more money than you could ever imagine.
Oh, for sure. And I'll tell you a quick story before we jump to the next thing. See, my very first year, I flew out to meet my friend in Denver in July because we wanted to scout this unit that I wanted to hunt so badly. And, you know, I was looking at the mapping system. So, you know, I knew the road wound up the mountain, and I knew where we could park the truck, camp, and I knew where we were going to scout. And it was at like almost 11,000 feet. Mm-hmm. Right. I live at 700 feet. Right. So it was like, and I'm training, I'm doing all the cardio stuff. And I had all the Sitka. I had a brand new Kafaru pack, a brand new pair of crispy boots. I had a Kafaru sawtooth, which is their floorless shelter. Mm-hmm. I had the medium box stove, which weighs like 5 pounds. And I had it all. I got out of the truck. We finally, after I flew into Denver, you know, from Detroit, we drove 5 hours to this place, finally get there as the sun is setting. And I pack my pack really kind of for the first time with all this extra food and stuff we were going to use. And I, the first slap in the face was putting the pack on, you know.
Wait, what time of year was this?
July. This July. Was like the first week of July.
So you're packing a stove in July.
Dude, yeah, legit.
Right,
And I'm like, but I thought that's what I had to have. I'm just being honest. I mean, it's looking back, but I'm just telling you, because I know there's somebody else that's like, they're looking at their stove going, oh man, should I have bought this? Mm-hmm. And the answer is no. But this is the funniest part. So we're going to hike this Jeep trail up the mountain a little further, and then it turns into an ATV. Then it turns into a, you know, foot traffic only trail. Mm-hmm. Dude, we started hiking up this, and it wasn't like this, you know, we're on video. No one can really see my hand gestures, but like the grade wasn't mega steep, you know, mm-hmm. but we're hiking and we're like, dude, we made it like 200 yards and we are winded. And my buddy, you know, God bless him, He's a cigarette smoker. So he was really winded. But I was like, you know, Johnny Big Lungs, I thought, and I was already like gassed. And I'm like, that's when the painful reality of like, this is way cooler on Instagram, you know, than what it is like right now. And I had like a mini breakdown. Like the elevation change got to me like real fast. And I actually read about this a little bit, where it can kind of mess with your mind a little bit, dehydration if you're not getting the right fluids and stuff, and irrational thoughts. I had a meltdown on the mountain on day one, because I'm like, I spent too much money on this. This is too hard. I don't want to do this. And, you know, so it's all, you know, the sun came up the next morning and it was all good. But that first morning when I'm sipping coffee, like, dude, you made some big, you know, financial mistakes. It's going to be okay, but like, you should have, you know, you could have done this a lot cheaper or a lot, you know, easier on yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think you're totally right. And that's why, so the first, I still haven't done that 10 miles deep for 10 days.
Hunt. Yeah. No.
I'll be totally honest with you, man. I have no intention on doing 10 miles deep for 10 days. I've gone a couple of days. And with a really, you know, with a nice tent or a tarp or something. Mm-hmm. And I have no problem doing that, but I just don't, I enjoy coming back to camp and cooking good food and sure. making it, it's, to me, it's a social event. And that's why I want to talk about going solo here in a minute, because we have a lot of fun when we go hunt. Last year, I had the opportunity to hunt both. I did some solo stuff and I hunted with Jordan and Ryan. I hunted with a few different groups of guys. And I enjoy both. I really do. I love the solitude of the mountain. But when I go solo, I still set up a base camp and I've got my two burner stove and I cook killer breakfast in the morning, man. I'll chop up bacon and egg and I have a great breakfast and then I go hit the mountain. And so far I haven't ever been in a lack of game because I've hunted solo and I've stayed near camp. I turkey hunted last year solo. I was in turkeys every day. I just suck and I missed when I took my shot. And then I elk hunted solo last year for a long weekend, and I was in elk every day, just never had an opportunity to take a shot. And that's what I'm saying. I don't think you always have to do that 10 miles.
No.
And for guys that aren't physically prepared or financially prepared, don't pay attention. I mean, pay attention to the Instagram and what's happening on social media. Do what you can afford. If you can't afford a stove and a floorless shelter, go buy you a $60 tent from Walmart that you can throw up next to your truck and you have a shelter, right? And you got a place to sleep in the woods. Go ahead.
To your point real quick, because here's another, it just kind of popped into my head. Like, you know, I, up until that night, that first like scouting trip I was just talking about, I hadn't slept in a tent since I was like 13 years old, like legit, like going on like 30 years of like, you know, haven't slept in a tent. Now I'm on the ground and you know what I mean? So there's and I know you wanted to talk about realities and expectations and everything like that. So I'll kind of back off the gas a little bit, but it's like, a $60 tent, spray it down with Camp Dry, you know, park it next to the truck and like, just, you're just, it's just about dipping your toes into the water. You know what I mean? So that's definitely a good, you know, I agree with that point for sure.
Yeah. Let's talk about your solo adventure then, because I think that's important too. We'll go ahead and talk about your hunt because I have some thoughts on it as well, but, so you were supposed to go hunt with a buddy the first year and go from there.
Yeah. So he ended up getting sick and I had to come off the mountain. Looking back in retrospect, I should have came off the mountain with him, but we drove separately. So he's like, you know, I'm heading down. He ended up messaging me later and saying that he had, you know, he'd gotten off the mountain or whatever, but he wasn't coming back. Nothing against him. We've talked about it and everything. We're cool, but that's just what happened. And so I'm like, all right, I'm solo. So as luck would have it, like the first day I just kind of hiked around. I didn't have a plan. I didn't know what to do or where to go. Like I said, I had been in this unit in July. We didn't spend a ton of time in this, you know, we didn't spend days. It was basically like a 4th of July weekend power trip to Denver to go out, you know, to this unit or whatever. So I didn't spend days and days, but I at least saw it, you know, with my own two eyes, which made me feel like it was like that emotional kind of a thing. So I ended up finding a meadow that was about 5 miles from where I'd camped. I camped about 11,000 feet, 11,500, almost 12,000 actually. And, kind of hiked this, you know, trail. It was a mountain biking, hiking trail across the mountain and then down the mountain to a meadow. And it took me like 4 hours. I left at like 7 a.m. and, got down there right around 11, had some lunch and was at a creek. There was guys on dirt bikes, you know, a couple hundred yards away, taking like a break or whatever. And I was kind of bummed about that, but it's like, this is, you know, kind of where I'm at. And they kind of quieted down. So I'm like, well, I'm going to hunt this meadow. And I'm like, well, I got this bugle tube, you know, cause I bought calls and I was trying to do all that. And I watched Corey Jacobson videos and it's stuff like that. So I kind of had a rough idea on how to call, and I've been practicing a little bit, so I could, you know, I was going to go out there and just rip a couple fat bugles and see what happened, right?
Bring them bulls right in, right?
Yeah. Well, ironically enough, first time ever calling, nothing happened, right? And I'm like, all right, and I'm on the other side of this meadow.
That's not how it works in YouTube.
I know. I was just as flabbergasted as you are, Chad. And this meadow is just nothing but muck. I mean, you see all the grass, but like, it's actually a lot muckier and nastier than it looks on TV. So I'm like, I can't even walk across this. And just as I was starting to make a plan, a couple minutes goes by and I hear a bugle and I'm like, man, I'm listening. The wind's blowing. I'm like, was that an elk or was that these guys goofing around? So I bugled back and then it bugled again. And I'm like, yeah, that was a bugle, but was it a dude? Right. Was it some other guy? And I'm like, oh man, you know, and then I hear these guys kind of hooting and hollering on this dirt bike trail. And I'm like, oh, maybe they're just messing around. Well, this bull, it was a bull. He ended up coming down to the meadow. And this was the moment where it became incredibly real. Like if you've never heard an elk bugle, like you're missing out, like a real one, like in your face kind of thing. He was across this meadow a couple hundred yards and he just rocked that whole, like when he let it rip, like I felt it in my chest. Like it was one of those things, like, don't ever forget this moment. you know, because when he bugled, it was like, I couldn't see him. There was pine trees and stuff. And he was in the shadows of the timber and everything. And, like it was an adrenaline dump, like nobody's business. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm elk hunting. So to make a long story short, we bugled back and forth at each other. And I'm trying to think like, how do I do this? You know, I don't want to be aggressive, but like, I don't think he's going to come out. I waited for like a half an hour and he was with his cows. There may have been another bull in that mix. I'm not 100% sure, but I worked my way around the meadow and there was some, you know, I kind of worked my way up the side of this mountain and there was these little benches that came, went up, flattened out, went up, flattened out again, got busted by a cow. As I'm bugling back and forth, I'm kind of bugling towards this bull. I'm literally walking towards this bull and bugling the whole time. There was, I looked up the ridge and there's this cow looking down at me. She busts off and I like threw my bugle tube up in the air. I'm like, I'm done, you know? And he bugles again. He hadn't moved. That bull hadn't seen me. He was on the, you know, the downside of this ridge. And I'm like, oh, sweet, game on. So we did this back and forth. And I got to a point where it's like, next time he bugles, I'm cutting him off. And that's what I did. I bugled right at him, cut him off. And that was it. He had had enough at that point. That's it. That pissed him off. So he ended up coming up the hill. With my inexperience, I bugled right at him. So he knew right where I was. So he came up at my, you know, I'm looking at 12 o'clock where he comes up and all of a sudden I just see dark chocolate legs and like this, that coffee cream hide and then antlers, white tip, chocolate antlers with white tips. And I remember thinking this bull is way bigger than he's supposed to be. I'm just thinking like branch antlered bull spike, whatever, you know, this is my first time. I don't deserve to see a big 6x6. And that's what he was. And he was at about 45 yards and coming, but he was looking, he knew the direction. And I was in this, you know, chunk of beetle kill and there was no shot opportunity. And just like they do on YouTube, the wind switched. I felt it hit the back of my neck and he was gone. And that was pretty much it. I sat there in like a puddle of sweat and tears for a minute, just kind of, you know, freaked out and experienced the moment. It was crazy.
Those are wonderful moments for sure. Yeah. And it is crazy because I've had people tell me last year I had a bull that was probably 20 yards or less. And then the year before that, I had a bull that was 20 yards and people say the thing all the time. What do you mean? How do you not get a shot at 20 yards? And I don't think people do understand how thick some of that stuff can be. It is
definitely,
they put themselves in just the right spot. It seems like.
Yeah.
Do you think, so, okay, let's move on then.
Sure.
About the struggles that you have in having to come off the mountain early. So talk about that.
Yeah.
I think these are very, very important lessons.
So that was 19. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, but you're good.
We'll dive into it. That was my first trip in 19. This was like day one. I'm 5 miles from camp. I looked at my watch and I was like, you know, by this time it's like 2 p.m. And I knew I had like 4 hours to get, because I didn't want to hike in the dark. I just didn't. All right. I had a trail I could go back, but I'm like, you know, it's going to take me like 4 hours to get back to camp. And I can't do this every day. You know, I can't come back to this meadow, this area along this creek. There was several meadows. I'm like, I'm going to have to reposition. And I had found a spot that was actually on a highway that I could access what I thought was like easier. I'm throwing up the air quotes again. So I hightailed it back to camp. That was like the hardest hike ever, because it was, you know, on a trail, but it was going up the whole way. I came down, coming down, and then I had to hike up. So like physically it beat me, which started to mentally beat me. You know, I dropped some F-bombs on the mountain that I think everybody probably heard, you know, because I was getting mentally and physically drained.
Yeah.
Got back to the tent right at dark and wanted off that mountain right then and there. Wanted a hotel room, didn't want to hunt. Got a homesick thing going all of a sudden. And even though the elk experience from a few hours ago was cool, it wore off. Got off the mountain, got into cell service. Here's the other thing. I didn't have a GPS or any kind of, other than my phone, I didn't have a communication device, which was dumb. That was like the, when you said like the wrong thing, that was, I didn't buy one of those until this year, this past season. I didn't have any, and that was the stupidest thing. But so I get into cell service, I call Michelle, and I'm like, I think I want to come home. And this is like after 2 days. And she's like, you spent a lot of money to come home now. She goes, you do whatever you want, but I'm just letting you just let it sink in. You've spent literally thousands of dollars to hunt for one day and then drive home. Like, why don't you get a hotel? So I kind of like, okay, I got a hotel for a couple of days. And that was probably the best decision on the first year, was having, like you said before, having a base camp to go back to. Cause I got a shower, I ate food. I woke up the next morning, like, all right, we got to pack the bag. We got to go up this road. We're elk hunting again. Like, I was back in the game just that fast by giving myself a civilization, break or whatever. And that's what I did in that year. I got two nights at this hotel and, hunted for a couple of days, hiked back down there, did another death march back down to this meadow. And, I told Michelle on that first year, I was in this hotel. There was no cell service except for the lobby. And this was the shitty part. I tell her like it's Monday morning or something like that. And I'm like, hey, if you don't hear from me by Wednesday, because I don't have a Garmin inReach, okay, like a dummy. If you don't hear from me by Wednesday, I'm going to screenshot you a location, a map where I'm going to camp. This is where you tell the rescue team to start looking. Like, how, that's a terrible thing to do to a family member. But I'm hey, I'm sticking around. I'll talk to you Wednesday. So, she didn't argue with me, but she did not like that. We talked about that after I got home. Like, that did not sit well with her. And so I hunted for like another day and a half and decided that I was pushing my luck. I had an accident on the mountain. Didn't hurt. I bruised my butt and hurt my pride. It was more than, what I actually did, but it could have been really, really bad. So that was like a sign from God, come off the mountain. And then, that was 19. So I did, still felt like I didn't, do my best, but I kind of gave myself a pass on that year. Cause it was my first year, right? This year I went out and without going into a lot of detail, I had another hunting partner, different person, knew the area well, invited me along to hunt. And in the last, couple weeks before the hunt, work called and he had to go to work and he just couldn't do the hunt. So I hadn't done any planning because I was kind of relying on my friend. So I didn't even know the area. So I had to like power scout this one unit, didn't give myself any backup units to hunt. I just kind of muddled it all together and I'm going out west. And, ended up basically hiking with a bow on my back for 5 days. Didn't have any kind of game plan. There was people everywhere from hunters to hikers. And it was just an area of, tourism basically. The mountain was being used for a lot of tourism as well as hunting. And I got overwhelmed, after about 5 days and really dejected, wasn't finding elk or hearing elk. And, basically gave it 5 full days, did the hotel thing one night cause I needed to get off the mountain, but I made myself go back again and, with gear and things that I, starting to think about, you didn't need this and why did you even bring that? Or why did you buy that? After like 5 days, I'm like, I'm going home, And so that's kind of where we're at right now. And we can dive a little bit deeper into the specifics of that if you want, but, that's the rough, I basically went over my head, didn't plan, didn't have a daily plan. And, that kind of like, you get frustrated really quick when all you're doing is hiking and sweating.
Yeah. Walking around without that plan. And, so I'll refer to your podcast. You recently did a show with Mark Livesay from Treeline Pursuits, and you guys had a really good conversation about that hunt plan, kind of how to put all that together. I kind of wanted to plug that because one, I thought that was a really good show and Mark is always a killer guest. The other thing, do you think it would have changed anything if you would have had a hunting, a partner that I know that you had partners, but if you would have had somebody there with you, do you think that you would have been able to stay on the mountain longer?
Absolutely. As long as that person had kind of the same mentality of like, let's tough it out. We're here. Let's tough it out. Which it's hard to find a good hunting partner because of the physical aspect or the mental aspect out there. You kind of have to both be on the same wavelength, pushing and pulling each other. So in one hand, like, yes, it is, but that person better be ultra committed, you know, as you are, because it's easy to be super committed on the drive out there.
Yeah.
You
know,
when the mountain starts to slam you both around, you both have to give each other that positive vibe. And I haven't experienced a whole trip with a hunting partner. My nephew who lives outside of Denver came down and spent like a day and a half with me, just kind of hiking around while I hunted. He wasn't hunting at the time. And I just thought that was really like that companionship was like, mm-hmm. it just gave me energy. And then when he left, you know, I was like sad again,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So it kind of plays with you a little bit. So it's just, you know, having a hunting partner is great, but choose wisely.
Yeah. It doesn't even just that you said it, the companionship. I think it's important, especially the first few years. It's really nice to be able to, it doesn't even like, you don't talk a lot, you know, when you're out hiking and you're out doing stuff, cause you're always trying to stay a little bit quiet in case you do come up on a herd of elk or deer or something. You don't want to spook everything off, but it's kind of nice that when you hike 200 or 300 feet, you know, up, everything's uphill in the mountains, it seems like. And you look at your buddy and they're sucking ass too. And you kind of look at each other and you're like, gosh, dang, that sucked.
Yeah.
And okay, cool. Well, we're both going, you know, but there's a little bit of that give and take with a hunting partner. And I think that's important those first few years to be able to have somebody there. And after you learn the mountain and learn how to not necessarily navigate, but just use your resources that you have and stuff. At that point, I think that people are more comfortable to be able to go out solo and be able to spend a couple of nights by themselves and understand
definitely
that solitude that's out there. Cause it's very, very quiet on the top of those mountains.
And dark. It gets very dark. Yep. I'll tell you the first night, not to keep jumping back to that first year, but I did make it back to camp that first, you know, after the elk encounter. And I do remember, and I actually have a picture of the sun setting behind the mountains, like sunset was still a ways away, but once it goes past the, you know, that side of the range, it's dark. And then when it gets dark, it gets real dark, you know, and it's a darkness that I wasn't prepared for that darkness. And I know nothing was going to just jump out of the woods, you know, and eat me. But at the time, you know, it does feel like all the predators are coming right for you kind of a thing. And yeah, it was definitely something I hadn't prepared for yet.
Chipmunks are the size of grizzly bears.
All of them.
Yeah. All of them are the most enormous chipmunks in the world. No, but I think everything that you said, I think rings true to beginning hunters, guys that have never been out there and experienced those mountains and the magnitude of the mountains too. They are just massive. I don't care what if you've never been out west and looked at a mountain, or even if you have been out west and looked at them, I'm looking at them right now out of my window and they don't look that bad. But these mountains out here in New Mexico that I'm looking at are over 10,000 feet. And just to run up those things is not the easiest thing to do. They're bigger than what they look like on TV or whatever. So that's a thing that I think a lot of people don't plan for, or they underestimate the size of the mountain.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, I've heard it many times and I say it too, like Google Earth, as great as it is, does the mountains no justice when it comes to the actual, like, looking up and the steepness of it. Even the areas like don't look that steep, you know, when you're coming from 700 feet elevation or 1,000 feet elevation, you know, you can get out there and just the sucking air, trying to breathe and getting acclimated to that elevation, mm-hmm. along with the actual steepness. And then you've got a pack on your back. Also, like those factors, like it's just, again, it makes you, like I said earlier, like all the expensive gear does nothing. Like, you know, just spending time in the mountains, you know, you can have all the expensive gear you want and it's not going to make that mountain any less steep. You know what I mean? So for that first timer that's going out there, like you really got to think about like, hey, am I really going to like this? Or, you know, I joked about it earlier, but it's like, you know, it does look a lot, you know, the romanticism of it looks so cool when you're watching Aaron Snyder do these 10-day backcountry hunts. You know, that dude's like the less than 1%, because he just, he's just been doing it all his life. Mm-hmm. You know, guys like that, that have been doing it all their life can do the 10 day solo. And he'll even tell you like 10 days is nuts. Like things get weird after about day five, mm-hmm. you know, or mm-hmm. for the average guy, things get weird by day three. If you're doing the solo trip, you know, if you're with a buddy, that 5 days, you know, might be kind of like each other's max, but, yeah, there's a lot of different factors that just don't get talked about a lot on a lot of these platforms that I really wish they would have talked about a couple of years ago. That saved me a couple of grand, at the very least.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And all those guys that are killing it right now, like the Aaron Snyders, they started somewhere. That dude didn't just go his first trip. I promise you, he didn't go hunt high country mule deer for 12 days. You know,
right.
There's a starting point. And that's the part that I want people to understand, is that it's okay to tiptoe into the water instead of just diving straight into the deep end.
Yeah.
I have more fun tiptoeing every year than I do any, you know, diving into anything. We enjoy our hunts, and that's why we go back every year. Me and Jordan and Ryan, whenever we put our camps together, man, we eat good. We have some beers. We enjoy it, man. So every year, it's almost like that Colorado elk hunt is, we look forward to it every year because it's almost like the guy's camping trip, you know?
Yeah.
Where we get
it has to be a little bit. It has to be a little bit, because the percentage rate of killing an elk in that state in Colorado is like, with archery equipment, it's like less than 10%. You know, so you have to go in there knowing that, you know, I got to say this carefully, but like, you should always, you know, prepare the best you can to kill a bull, but you have to go in there knowing that, you know, look, this is an adventure. I'm mm-hmm. taking time off of work and away from my family. There's more to it than just, you know, putting a tag on that bull. If that's all you're like tunnel visioned on, you are not going to have a good time. You're going to go home early, or you're just going to go home pissed. And you know, you totally missed the point.
I remember my first year coming home from Colorado. For whatever reason, I thought that I was going to be upset because we didn't kill anything. Yeah. We had some incredible interactions with bulls, but we didn't kill anything. And I just remember driving home and feeling so satisfied, right? Like it was it was such an awesome trip.
Yeah.
I didn't care that I didn't have anything in the back of the truck. You know, it was such a cool trip. Learned a lot. There was a little bit of disappointment, I guess, you know, but I knew that we only had like 5 days. So then, it's not something to be bummed out about for sure. Okay, I wanted to move on. We could probably talk about that kind of stuff all day.
Oh, and yeah.
I will. Yeah, but I would like for people to go listen to your show, because you do cover a lot of that. And like we talked about in the beginning, you're very humble about it, and you'll talk openly about that, things that went wrong.
Yeah.
I did want to move into gear a little bit too.
Sure, let's go.
We've touched on that. There's, so you went archery elk, September elk, Colorado. Mm-hmm. How much gear did you take with you when you went?
As far as clothing gear or just
clothing
like
gear, were you taking like the Arctic level puffy jackets? So did I my first year. I had a tough box in the truck that was full of the just in case kind of stuff.
I did. I ended up buying, I can damn near rattle it off real quick. Like I had the Sitka Windstopper, I think it was called the Windstopper hoodie or something like that, but it's basically their big puffy jacket. They have a new one now. It's the Kelvin Light down jacket, which I own and I absolutely love, but I had like the big puffy, right?
Yeah.
And it's like September in Colorado, and people told me this, but I just didn't believe it. Like even the last 10 days or so, with some slight, you know, exceptions, it's pretty warm still in 70s during the day. Mm-hmm. And it can get down to freezing at night. But if you've got a good sleep system, you know, it's only going to be so cold for so long. Once the sun comes up over the mountains, it warms up ridiculously fast. Mm-hmm. And so that damn coat didn't make it out of the truck in year one, and it didn't make the trip at all last. It's still sitting in the closet. It didn't get touched. So that was like, I didn't need that kind of a purchase, you know. And there was a couple other things too, as far as gear, you know, like I had the Jetstream jacket, which is an awesome jacket. I actually use it for my whitetail stuff more than I do out west. It's a windbreaker, sheds a little bit of water. Like I said, it's a bulletproof, you know, if you're glassing on the top of a mountain and you need a, you know, like a bulletproof windbreaker type of coat, that is it. But it was heavy. It took up a lot of space. It doesn't pack down very well. And again, I talked to John Barklow about it, and he's like, you should have went with the mountain jacket from Sitka, which is basically a paper thin, you know, zip up windbreaker jacket that's breathable, packs up to the size of a Coke can, you know what I mean? And weighs zero. And that's like my favorite piece ever. And it's like, damn, you know, so it's those little things that you learn along the way of what you need, what you don't need. And by the way, you know, that jacket's not cheap either. You still don't need it. You know, a windbreaking layer, you know, that you could get at a Walmart will get you by on year number 1 through 5, you know, if money's tight. Like, don't think like, crap, now I got to go buy the Sitka mountain jacket. No, you don't. You know, I mean, you can supplement for now, you know, with mm-hmm. something less expensive. Just get out there.
Yeah. That first year that I went, I had lots of stuff. It didn't all go in my pack, but it was all readily available. You know, I knew that if I needed to come off the mountain, which ultimately, like I said, we ended up base camping anyway, so I was there every night. I could grab whatever I needed to based on the weather for that day. But I had way too much stuff. My second year, I realized very, very quickly, there's very little stuff in my pack anymore.
Yeah.
Especially for a day hunt. There's some snacks and water and a couple of Band-Aids, you know, I mean, it's
very minimal. Exactly.
And it's wonderful to carry around versus that first year when I had like a 50 pound pack or something. Now
it's like, with a 5 pound stove.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Why am I carrying the stove?
That was funny. I remember listening to that there was an episode where you were talking about like what was in your pack. And I was like, wow, he took a stove with him on a September hunt. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't even really come to play until
November.
Late October, like late second rifle or something in Colorado. But we all got to learn, right? You have to learn somewhere. And I think one of those things that's important, you said the word committed earlier. When you committed yourself to going out west, that's the best way for people to learn, right? Is you just got to go out there and do it.
Yeah. And
I mean, that's what it took for me. That first year, I learned a ton of stuff. Second year, as far as gear goes, second year, I scrapped about half of everything I took with me.
Yeah.
And now I still have a tough box that's full of random stuff.
Sure.
And it goes in the truck every year. I know it's going to go with me, but do I need it? Probably not. It's in the truck. My truck doesn't have any trouble hauling that thing around.
Right.
But it's there if I need it, you know?
Yeah. I'm the same way. In fact, I forgot to mention this part, like the first few days I hunted, I was wearing this in 2019, my first elk hunt, I was wearing a $20 pair of Wrangler I think they're just called it Wrangler Adventure pants. You can get them at Walmart literally right now for like $20. Mm-hmm. And they're like a hiker pant. You can get them in like, you know, just like an olive drab or like a gray, you know, like the earth tone colors that, you know, a lot of guys are into, just the solid colors out there, which is another thing I learned over the last couple of years. Matching camo isn't necessarily a
thing.
Yeah, I know. Break the, you know, somebody's head just exploded just now. You know, like what? Yes, you have to. No.
There is the group of people though, that if you don't match, it drives them crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do like, I go out there now. I bought the Sitka mountain pants for like $200 and they got knee pads in them, which once you wear a pair of pants with knee pads in them, you don't want to go back to, to a different pair of pants. But like I said, if money's a thing, you can hunt Colorado in a pair of $20 Wrangler adventure pants. I wear them all the time around the house. You know, like I said, I have the Sitka pants. They're bought and paid for now. But if you're like, you're on a budget and you're seeing a dude like head to toe in Sitka and you're like, man, I can't afford those pants. You don't have to have them. You know what I mean? That's another gear thing. It's a luxury. It's a luxury thing. At the end of the day, this whole conversation about just getting out there and understanding that you don't have to have the top of the line stuff. Is it nice? Yes. But is it necessary? No. You could literally probably go to TJ Maxx and find like a puffy jacket that was like $150 on sale for like $50, like right now, you know what I mean? One of those stores, totally. and or a buy sell trade place. For instance, like if you want a pack, you know, I run a Kafaru pack. If you don't want to spend full retail, there's Kafaru insiders on Facebook. Those guys are buy, sell, trade, not brand new stuff. Guys buy brand new stuff and they're like, this isn't what I wanted. Somebody wants that pack, I guarantee you. And there's a lot of really good deals on there. So if you have to have a higher end pack from a company like Kafaru, then there's probably a buy, sell, trade for Kafaru, XO, you know, Stone Glacier. You know what I'm saying? There's ways to doing it to save that penny for sure.
Yeah, most definitely. Absolutely. How do you feel about floorless shelters? So I have a note on here that I want to talk to you about your floorless shelter sleeping bag experience. And then I think we'll wrap it up. I want to hear this story though.
So this year I went back to Colorado. I bought a Kafaru sawtooth teepee floor. Like Chad said, it's a floorless shelter, has the ability to take on a stove. I bought it again because of the romanticism behind it. It just looked rad. You know, I saw a couple Donnie Vincent movies where he was like in a Kafaru teepee and I'm like, I want that. And I want the stove, you know, and I want all this stuff. And I even talked to Aaron Snyder about it and he's like, you don't need one in Colorado in September. Just get a tent. Like floorless shelters suck. And we sell floorless shelters, but I had to have one. So I had it. So I get up and I set tent up that first day. I threw my sleeping pad out, my sleeping bag out, and zip it shut. And I'm going to go hunting for the day. So I did a big day trip, came back just before dark, did the food thing and, you know, got to be dark. I unzipped the tent and this little mouse ran out, little deer mouse or whatever, you know? And I'm like, huh, son of a bitch, you know, he comes running out. And I'm like, first thing I looked right at my sleeping bag and I'm like, man, he better not have been chewing on that bag. I'm going to be hot. And, I unzipped the bag, you know, I had a 20 degree, slick bag from Kafaru. So I unzipped this bag and right in the middle is like mouse droppings. Like just zeroed right in on these freaking mouse droppings. Dude, I look at the bottom of the bag and there's more mouse droppings. This dude spent the whole day pooping in my sleeping bag. I'll tell you right now in front of God and everybody, I was ready to pack up camp and leave the mountain right then.
Oh, that's there. Too funny.
Like I wanted off. I'm like, there's no way I'm sleeping tonight. Like this guy's going to come back while I'm sleeping and he's going to, you know, I'm getting the heebie-jeebies just
in my mouth.
Oh dude, he's going to crawl in my mouth and I'm going to be like, you know, so to top it all off, I get him out and I crawl in my sleeping bag and I'm laying there kind of still. And of course I've got my headlamp on, right? Cause I'm like, I'm going to kill this sucker. He comes back in and like, we make eye contact and I'm like, get over here. You know, like I yelled at him and he took off back out of the shelter, the floor of the shelter. And, I didn't see him the rest of the night, or at least I don't, there was no poopy. There was no fresh poopy in my bag, but ants got into my bag. I was laying in there cause I was just in an area where, you know, the black carpenter ants, they weren't biting me or anything, but I could feel them crawling on my legs and everything. And I'm just like, I laid right there thinking I'm selling this sucker as soon as I get home. As soon as I did, I had it sold in like 15 minutes and I ended up buying an actual tent with a floor. And so far I haven't really used it yet, but just as far as like the setup and everything. And again, I, you know, not to keep mentioning Aaron, but I did call him on the phone and ask him like, what should I get? And he pointed me in the right direction. And he's like, dude, he's like, I spend more time out there than anybody. I don't like sleeping on the dirt. I like a tent with a floor in it, you know? Yeah. So that right there was like, that was like the perspective that I needed to like, okay, you once again bought with your eyes and not with your brain. And so that was, you know, it's a funny story, but it again, it's like, you know, I know a lot of people are probably going floorless or they're just going to sleep under a tarp and they haven't even camped out since they were kids and they're going to just sleep on the dirt. And so that's going to be a rude awakening just because they see these guys that like, I just sleep under a tarp, you know? So now I have a tent with a floor and like, I'm already like, you know, a mouse proof. I know that I'm mouse proof right now.
Yeah. So that's funny. I have a floorless shelter and it's a teepee style. And I've used it many, many times. I like it. For those that are listening that aren't really familiar, you can save a lot of weight if you go floorless. And that's the whole idea behind those floorless shelters. And in the teepee style, they work great for stoves. So if you want to put a lightweight stove or whatever. but you do sacrifice the fact that you have a floor and critters can get in there. And here in New Mexico, we have snakes and things like that too. And so does Southern Colorado. And I have both, right? I've got a really nice ultra lightweight floored shelter and I've got a floorless one.
Yeah.
And I've even got, when I hunted in Arizona, I have this huge canvas tent and that's my favorite tent of everything I have. That thing's like a hotel room. It's fantastic. But I'm not going, it weighs 92 pounds or something like that. So it's not going, you're not packing that dude in anywhere.
Right.
Anyway, I wanted to hear that story because I wanted that to people to understand, you know, that there's benefits and negatives to all of that gear that you have out there. And some of it's needed, some of it's wanted. Anyway, that's a good story. So if you had to, as we part ways here, we're coming up on about an hour. You got any lessons learned or parting words of wisdom that you'd like to share with everybody?
Yeah, for sure. I've been thinking about this. I think about it all the time now too. Like if you're going to plan a hunt like this, and we could, like I said, spend so much more time in this, and I'll probably go a little bit deeper on this on my own show, which is Harvest Holiday Podcast. It's just holiday with two L's, by the way. but honestly, the first thing that I would invest in before you buy gear would be some sort of a communication device that you can touch base with home. Like I use a Garmin InReach Mini. I like it. I know some people, there's some other stuff coming out in the market right now. I can't really speak on it because I haven't tried it. Definitely some kind of communication device and learn to use it, get real comfortable and familiar with it before you head out. You know, I bought mine in June. I used to take it on my pack hikes when I would go train and I would text Michelle and say, hey, does this thing working? You know, and I would figure out how to use it because that's your lifeline out there. Mm-hmm. It brings comfort when you can text your wife or your friend, you know, when you're in the tent at night by yourself, hiding from mice or whatever, you know, that little bit of communication that boosts your morale, you know, to have that connection at home. And that might be what gets you that next day or two. Or, hey, I got a bull down. I need to help packing out or whatever. So that's before you buy the Sitka gear or the packs and all that stuff, a communication device should definitely be something that has to go. Boots is another big topic we didn't really talk about, but you know, if you can try on different companies' boots, different pairs of boots, invest the money. There's spending money and then there's investing money. You're on your feet all day. Definitely put your money into a set of boots. There's also a new product out there called Sheep Feet. Have you heard about Sheep Feet? Mm-hmm. The custom orthotics. You know, if you can afford some custom orthotics or just a really good pair of boots and get them broken in, that's what you spend your whole day in, all day, every day. So great set of boots. And then, you know, again, you know, don't get caught up in the high-end gear thing, especially if you're coming from the Midwest or, you know, the East Coast states and you're not used to elevation. If you can make a special trip out, like I did the one year, I took a couple extra vacation days and I went out and put boots on the ground. That was probably the biggest, you know, confidence builder. But if you can't do that, learn, like we talked about Mark Livesay's course. He was on my podcast. Invest your money into a course like Treeline. I think it's treelineacademy.net. That's like $100, but I'm telling you right now, I wish I had it a couple of years ago. Learning how to, you know, use these maps, plan a route, and have a daily plan. You know, we touched a little bit about this too, but I'm definitely, my big thing this year is to go out there with purpose. I mean, obviously killing a bull elk is the purpose, right? But to have a morning, noon, and night plan each and every day. So I've got something that I can look at and say, okay, today we're taking this route that I have put on my Onyx maps or whatever. We're going to be doing these things. So if you've got something to do, because last year, I'll tell you the honest to God truth, the biggest thing that caused my quitting, I didn't have a plan every day. I just kind of aimlessly, like the mountains are so big and so vast. Like you see it on the maps, like you're just going to hit, I'm going to hit this drainage, then that drainage, and I'm going to run this ridge. And you get out there and you're like, holy shit. Yeah. It's like 6 miles to get just to that first drainage. We're not making it to that. You know, so like the overwhelmingness. So having a plan and having purposeful things to do each and every day can keep you occupied. And then my friend Todd Johnson, he gave me this advice. Take a journal. And I'm going to do that this year. I'm going to take a journal. I'm going to write things down. I mean, we have our phones now, so we can do like photos and like Instagram stories, but like write things down, things that worked out great, things that you like you said, like what did you take in your pack this year? And then when you get home, like just cross off what didn't make it out of the pack, what didn't make it out of the truck, you know, and you're just going to learn by process of elimination. I promise you, my pack's going to be a lot lighter this year. I've already like eliminated a few things and, you know, but it's really about just, you know, getting that tag first, you know, having the money for that food, fuel. Oh, that was another thing. Backcountry food. Try a bunch before you go. Don't just assume that.
Yeah, right.
Because it's a bit. That's another eye-opening experience. You know, obviously, when you're back there carrying stoves and fresh food out there, you know, it's kind of hard to do. But you know, pick out some of these companies that you think you might like to try and do it now. Like we're recording this in January, so pick a few of those meals that you think you're going to live off of. The one that everyone likes, you might hate. You know, and then you got to eat that while you're out there. So think about foods that you might like and don't get sucked into the backcountry food thing too badly. And you'll just have a better experience. Whatever you can do to like maximize a good experience versus going out there and just getting thrashed. Cause like I said, the mountains are going to do that on their own. You don't have to worry about that. You're going to get your butt handed to you one way or the other. So to minimize that by, you know, upping the level of good experiences and making sure. This is another really important, like when you leave, and this is something I'm going to talk about too on my show. Make sure you're right at home, you know, the chores are done. And it sounds kind of silly, but like when you leave your family behind, make sure you're good mentally and emotionally, you know, you've checked things off the list at home that you needed to do. You know, you're going to be leaving because some of us haven't spent that much time away from our wives and children so that there can be that separation. The thing that I tell myself that I'm telling myself this year is like, you're going to be back before you know it. So enjoy that time out there, you know, take every moment, as cheesy as it sounds, like seriously live in that moment. Cause you're going to be right back to work, you know, before you know it, and wishing you'd have stayed that extra couple of days in the mountains. Cause the mountains will change your life. They do call to you. You know, as bad as you get beat up out there physically and mentally on the drive home, you're like looking over your shoulder, like, I can't wait to go back. It's a crazy feeling. And the mountains are a special place. And again, it's experiences over gear, 10-1 for a guy that's still very new at it and learning along the way. But you know, for that guy that is where I was, or gal, a couple of years ago, that's like, I'm doing it now. What? Like, this is, you know, the best advice I could give is just like, don't overdo it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it right there too, is don't overdo it, man. There's a lot of stuff right there in those parting words of wisdom. Probably my favorite thing that you said was invest in the knowledge. And we talk about that a lot on this podcast too, in previous episodes. And that's, you know, if you can, all of that gear that we just talked about, if you can just don't buy that extra base layer that you're not going to need. Yeah. And that pays for the Tree Line Pursuits Academy or Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting, or it pays for Go Hunt subscription so that you can find a better unit to hunt, or Elk Bros, or just all of these different things that are so important to the mountain on the knowledge base that you take out with you versus having all the cool guy gear, man. But I'll give you a parting words of wisdom too. Not you, but just the people. This would be probably one of mine. And this is something that I learned last year. So being a new hunter over the last four or five years, whatever, initially I was doing all of this crap, and not crap, because hunting is a blast and I love the mountains, but I always had my phone and I always had a camera and I was always trying to get pictures because I wanted content, right? I wanted to be able to put stuff on Instagram, and I was almost purposely stopping so that I could take pictures and do stuff. And last year I told myself, when I got to Colorado, don't even take your phone out of your pocket. None of that crap matters. None of it matters until you have the time for it.
Yeah.
And I had the absolute best time with just not caring about my phone, not caring about pictures, not caring about anything, man, except enjoying the moments in the woods, finding elk, bugling, getting into calls back and forth with bulls. And I just had so much fun, man. It was such an amazing trip. Last year was so much fun. And I don't know, it could be that I've learned enough over the last few years where now I'm putting myself in better situations. But I just found that when I take those moments in the mountains to totally disconnect, and I have a Garmin inReach and I can text people if I want to. And I was doing that at nighttime from camp, texting with some of my buddies. My buddy CJ killed a bull. He was solo in New Mexico and I was solo up in Colorado, and we were texting back and forth about his bull, you know, and it was just really, really cool to have some of those moments. But during the day, man, I was just totally unplugged and I loved every single moment of it, man. So peaceful and so quiet out there. So that's the thing that I will do in the future. I don't care about my phone. I don't care about my cameras. They'll be there for the moment, right? If there's a bull on the ground or, and when I hunted with another friend of mine, I didn't have a tag. So I carried a camera with me just so I could take pictures of my buddy. And, you know, me and my friend CJ were both hunting with another friend, Dan. CJ and I, neither one, we both had cameras. Dan had the tag and we just let him hunt and we just enjoyed taking pictures and doing stuff that way.
Yeah.
For the financial part, one thing I also try to tell people too, is if you have the opportunity to go hunt with somebody and you don't have a tag, you don't have to spend that $700, but the amount of, or now it's 800, like you said, near 800 bucks in Colorado. You can go out and you can learn so much by just spending time on the mountain with your friend who maybe has the tag. You know, you don't have to carry a bow. You don't have to carry a rifle, whatever season you're hunting in. And you, man, there's so much to be learned just from that experience alone. And I think a lot of times that people think if they don't have the tag, they don't have the business being out there on the mountain. And that's the case.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I heard somebody else kind of say something very similar. Like maybe you don't have all the gear, or maybe you can't afford the tag, but maybe you and your buddies can plan a camping trip, throwing up the air quotes again, a camping trip out to Colorado the first week of September. What a great opportunity on a very cheap level to go out there and just in a relaxed kind of way, camp and hunt, air quotes again, you know, try to find elk, test out your gear, see how hard it really is, or what you don't need or what you do need, and get that extra experience for a cheaper cost, because chances are you're probably not going to kill one.
Well, yeah, and if there's four buddies and all four buddies have a bull tag, I can promise you in a 5 to 7 day hunt, you're not coming home with four bulls. It could happen, but the likelihood of that happening is very, very slim.
Yeah,
because you figure one guy shoots one, that's a whole day, man.
Yeah, I was gonna say a day or two of getting your
getting it out of there. Yeah, getting it packed on ice, getting it out of there, and then you're in for another one. If the next guy shoots one, you're almost at 5 days right there with killing two bulls and packing two bulls out. So
yeah, for sure.
I think it's a good way people can split cost of fuel. They can split gear cost. Not everybody needs a jet boil in their pack, right? You just got to boil water, so you could do that with one jet boil. There's so many different ways that you could save money. And I'm going to wrap this up right here. There's a really good chance I'm probably going to have Jason back on the show again. He's awesome to talk to, and he's got a lot of those good lessons learned. But for those of you that want to reach out, if you want to ask him questions about the things that he's learned, or maybe mishaps that he's had, or gear mistakes, or just whatever, how do the people get in touch with you? Where do they find you at?
Yeah, for sure. First of all, Chad, thanks for having me on the show. I'm definitely absolutely humbled. You know, I reached out to you a couple of years ago because I wanted to do my own podcast, and you were the first person I reached out to, and we had a great conversation. You were actually my first guest on the Harvest Holiday podcast.
Yeah.
So again, thank you not only for your friendship, but for, you know, helping me get started and this cool thing that we're doing with podcasting and helping people just like you and I. Yeah. So for those that want to reach out to me, I've got two platforms on Instagram, obviously the Harvest Holiday podcast. And again, I spell my last name with two L's. So it's Harvest Holiday with two L's, all one word, podcast, for that page. On my personal page, you're more than welcome to reach out. It's just Jason Holiday 545. Again, Holiday spelled with two L's, and you can reach me out on there. The podcast platform, Spotify, iTunes, and a host of other ones that it gets sent out to that I don't even know the names, but I know, you know, when I try to upload shows, I try to provide that little link in the top left corner of like my Instagram story that you can immediately go to Spotify. It's kind of a convenient way to do that. So again, if anybody has any questions or just wants to comment or whatever, you know, I'm just trying to let this show grow organically and having fun with it. And, you know, hopefully somebody benefits, whether it be, you know, from a financial aspect or, you know, whatever mistake I made, maybe they can curve around that mistake and find some success there. So again, you know, I welcome the correspondence and we have to do this again, because there's like, I'm looking down at a notepad and there's still like a whole bunch more stuff we could have talked about. So yeah. Again, I'd be more than happy to be on the show.
Yeah. Save them. We'll definitely do that. I definitely want to circle back with you as we get closer to season and then after this season too. So, yep. I certainly take a lot away from your show. I look forward to it every time it comes out. So for the listeners on my show, I'll put a link to Jason's podcast platform, probably iTunes or something on, or maybe your Instagram will be linked down below. Also, all of that stuff will be in the description. So if you're looking for him, you'll know where to find him. But Jason, thank you very much for coming on the show, man. This was cool. It was a pleasure.
The pleasure was all mine, Chad. Thank you so much.
All right, man.